the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers, of course, your Arizona Cardinals, recording episode 658 with my co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and this is our 2025 Cardinals NFL draft review, Seth. After all was said and done, the Cardinals did what the Cardinals did. Wouldn't you say, Seth, we now have some serious trends, especially when it comes kind of early in the draft, right?
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about it, and we've kind of pushed back on some narratives, or not narratives, but, you know, mock drafts this year. And it wasn't anything, I would say, that was negative. We weren't doing it to be rude to people, but we were very in tune, I think is the best way to put it, with what has happened thus far. And that's all we can use, right? Like, that's all we can use, and the trend absolutely 100% continues, and it kind of identifies for the future what we can look at and see. Because I think the first thing that you and I really pushed back on this offseason was when a very talented player that was drafted very, very quickly after the Cardinals picked, Gray Zabel, getting mocked to the Cardinals in the first round. And you and I were kind of like, you know, they've never even taken an FCS player, let alone, you know, shown any interest on day one and taking somebody that's not from a power now four, but previously a power five conference. And that trend continues. And really, it's really just the power two conferences early in the draft for them, right?
It is, because they in three drafts under Monty Austin-Fort, they have, what is it now? They've had seven first and second round picks. Every single one has been either Big Ten or SEC. That's it. Big Ten or SEC. That is it. Because you had Paris from the Paris Johnson from the Big Ten, Bijo Jalari from the SEC. Last year they had Marv, Big Ten, first round, Darius Robinson, the first round, SEC, Max Melton, Big Ten. This year you've got Walter Nolan, SEC. You've got Will Johnson, Big Ten. And well, the other trend is that the Cardinals just love to draft cornerbacks. That makes seven cornerbacks drafted in three drafts, seven cornerbacks selected, and a whopping four of them in the top 90.
And it's just such a departure from the previous regime where, you know, I highlighted it the other day.
Yes, you did.
I mean, Steve Keim drafted one corner in the top 75, two.
In 10 years.
In 10 years. Yeah, two when you count Brandon Williams being a third round pick. Like, that is an astonishing lack of investment at a premium position. And that's something that we've come away from this as well. Monty Austin-Fort, he believes in premium positions. And again, I don't want to discredit everything Steve Keim did, because we can look back and you know, Buda Baker is a phenom. Tyrann Mathieu was a godsend.
Trey McBride, a stud.
Yeah, Trey McBride is phenomenal. But those are his biggest hits, and those are tight ends and safeties. You know, Monty Austin-Fort has come in and immediately been like, we're drafting creators and protectors, and that's what we're doing. And it's something that my old buddy Justice Mosqueda talked about all the time. Like, day one and two picks should be creators or protectors. Like, we're not taking, and what I mean by that is, you're either creating big plays, so quarterbacks, wide receivers, pass rushers, you know, interior or edge pass rushers, or you're protecting. So obviously offensive line, specifically who protect against those creators, but then DBs, corners specifically, right? Because they're the protectors against those offensive creators. And Monty has done that in spades. I mean, that's his, all he's looked for. And is, I mean, you look at it, offensive, you know, offensive tackle, defensive end, wide receiver, interior pass rusher, corner, interior pass rusher, corner. Like, that is all he's looked for in these drafts. And the other thing we can identify now is he has archetypes, right? Like, he has guys that he identifies as players. And it's very difficult, obviously, when you're drafting 16 to know, you know, like, was Jalen Walker their really their guy at, if he would have been there at 16, or would they have stuck and taken Walter Nolan? You know, we can him and haw and all that all day, but when they took Walter Nolan, all you had to do is look back at Monty's time with the Tennessee Titans, right? And Jeffrey Simmons. And Jeffrey Simmons, for about a five-year stretch before injuries, you know, plagued him so much, was just a complete and utter game wrecker for the Titans. He was, I mean, he this is a guy that was a second team all pro, has made three Pro Bowls, and he's just a difference maker. And but he's battled injuries. You know, he came into the league with a knee injury, and then he's battled some injuries throughout his career. But I mean, the last 4 years, this is one of the best defensive tackles in the league, and that's what he sees in his first round pick. And so it makes sense, right? An SEC dominant defensive line, interior pressure defensive lineman that you get in the middle round that has, you know, a red flag, quote unquote. Simmons, obviously, the injury. Nolan's with the, you know, oh, he doesn't love the game, allegedly, type talk. And you know, that's something that
those things are like, when I hear that, because like I kept running across comments, whether it be on your site or on social media, yet I never found anything that talked about that. I'm like, I always hate the ones that talk about, like, on the, like, aside from football, tape, injuries, and legit off the field things. The other stuff where they talk about attitude, love, they take plays off, I always struggle with those because.
Well, and think about this, Jess. This is one of the things I was actually talking to somebody about. Who benefits the most from having those, you know, talks about he doesn't love the game, and you know, that's why he wasn't great at Texas A&M. The guy that got fired, right? That had two first round picks, a second round pick, and a third round pick on his defensive line. And his defense wasn't good, you know? So like that's the crap that comes from guys like Jimbo Fisher. They're, you know, his lackeys that don't have jobs anymore. That's that crap. And like you said, it's not just frustrating. It's kind of infuriating because it discredits a kid that put the effort and the work in. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, whether it was Nolan or, oh man, I cannot remember who the kid was that had some of the same conversations about him. And another team was like, oh no, we loved everything about him. Like, he was a football guy. He's just a little, you know, he's a little eccentric. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, it's hard to really find and or justify some of these guys. And so you gotta break them down, because it's like, I'm not qualified to understand or really get why they struggled for a time being or weren't an All-American every year, right? Like, why wasn't Walter Nolan an All-American every year? Well, you know, sometimes it's hard. The game of football is hard, and especially in the SEC, other teams have All-Americans all over their roster too. But I think it's more of an indictment of the coaching and the scheme when you, again, you have two first round picks, a second round pick, and a third round pick, and your defense isn't very good. And that says a little more to me about the scheme than it does about the players.
Right, right. Now, if we want to look out, I want to bring this up because since we do the mock draft every year, I want to toot our horns a little bit because if we look at how our mock drafts perform overall, we are consistently pretty all right. I mean, no mock draft is amazing because it's wild out there. But let's just kind of go through this. Seth, on your mock draft from top to bottom, picks number 1 through 32, you went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 players where you had them pegged exactly, team and pick. You nailed the Cardinals pick, albeit you had the Cardinals picking Nolan at number 22. So you have a 7th player. And then you had Travis Hunter going 2nd overall. No one expected the Jags to trade up for that. But so you had 6 perfect picks in terms of pick, in terms of player team pick. You had one where it was player to team and another one that was player to pick. Mine, I felt pretty smart after this because I had 10. I had 10 nailed picks and then an 11th Travis Hunter, which was in the right spot, but I didn't match anyone with any team other than the ones that had. And the ones that, obviously, Cam Ward was easy.
Carter and Campbell were easy.
Carter was easy. Yeah, Carter, Campbell, Will Campbell was easy. The Jaguars trade messed you up is that's what yeah. happened there because then, you know, Genty didn't go to the Jags. He went to, and then you had Membo go pick above where he actually went. And so, but after that, you nailed the Colston Loveland pick with the Bears because that when you talked about it, it kind of felt like out of left field, but they were 100% on that. We both nailed the Tyler Warren pick. I am sad that it happened, but the Niners picking Mykal Williams was a very 49ers thing to do. And the thing was, is that the Cardinals, it felt like the way I had picked the Cardinals to get Derek Harmon was, but the two players that I wish they could have gotten, Mykal Williams and Jalen Walker, landed with the exact teams. And then I don't know how I did it, but the fact that I was like, And I doubted myself when I read it the next day. I'm like, oh yeah, they'd signed Najee Harris, but the Chargers drafting O'Marrion Hampton. I'm like, oh, that's a very Jim Harbaugh thing to do. Malachi Starks to the Ravens, of course. But our mock draft, we're awesome. Nobody's gonna care though. But what was your biggest surprise from round one? I'm gonna say other than the Jags trading up for Travis Hunter, what were your biggest surprises?
The Jags trading up was obviously the biggest thing. From there, it became kind of interesting how this fell. I was happy and not, you know, I think Tyler Booker is going to be good or has a chance to be good, but I didn't want the Cardinals to take that chance on him. and so to see him go at 12 is an eye opener. I don't know how you feel about that.
It made sense, like, because they just had Zach Martin retire, so they're like, so let's just plug in a new guard, and he's good enough. He's good enough, but for the Cardinals, you're like, but what? Because he's so not fast. He's so unathletic comparatively. He barely meets. He barely meets the minimums you want. Now, he's got the tape. The tape is great. The mentality is great. The character is great. But he's only bare minimum the athletic traits, which makes him a tough sell in the mid to upper first round, right?
Yeah, and then, you know, not to backtrack too much, I was kind of surprised the Panthers went with Teatro McMillan because, like, I mean, I get it. You know, obviously you want to pair up your guy, Bryce Young, with a young, athletic, you know, big-bodied receiver. The Cardinals did the same thing last year with with a superior prospect in Marvin Harrison Jr., but you know, it's a similar type of thing. It was an interesting pick. Let's just leave it at that. You know, the Bucks were surprising to me. I don't know how you felt, but like they just, you know, obviously not
it's replacing Godwin essentially is just it felt. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. They're the Chris Godwin, but I'm like, weird. But I mean, I get the feeling Baker Mayfield is going to love Emeka Buka.
But then, you know, the Rams completely trading out, or the Texans and the Rams completely trading out with guys staring them in the face was surprising to me as well. I did not think that either of those teams would make those moves. I was really surprised. And then I'm kicking myself because I even text you guys this, but Tyreek Williams sneaking into the first round. I got a little hint from a buddy that was like, hey, I think there's some chatter that he's going to go at the back end of round one to one of the contenders. You know, keep an eye on it. And you know, he goes and he was plus 1800 to go in the first round. And I wish I would have just taken the advice and fired on it, but I didn't. So that was disappointing. But yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, there wasn't too much shocking. I mean, Williams and Connerly and Hairston going back to back was a little surprising, but you know, the Bills like athletes, the Commanders just, you know, they're doing everything they can, right, to protect Jaden Daniels. So they're going to invest heavily. So it makes sense to an extent.
Yes. Now that's bring it. So what we want to do for the remainder of the show, we're going to talk about kind of the picks that the Cardinals had. And we won't talk like the other surprise, obviously, Will Johnson falling out of round one. And that we'll talk about that in day two for the day two picks. Shedeur Sanders falling all the way to the fifth round. That's something else. We don't need to talk about that. We're Cardinals centric, although holy cow, that was wild. So we'll talk about day one. We'll take about the two pick, the day two picks, and then the day three picks, and then wrap things up kind of grading things and how we view things. So let's talk about round one, and they select Walter Nolan. Now, you had them taking Nolan, and I had them taking Derek Harmon, which essentially, what didn't you say, is basically if it came down to it, it came down to those two players based on who was on the board, because Tyler Booker was off the board. John Gambadoro Gambo from Arizona Sports, he gave us the Gambo five as he does every year, and this year it was kind of a six. He said Booker, he said Josh Simmons, Kelvin Banks, Walter Nolan, Michael Williams, and also honorable mention Derek Harmon. Banks and Williams we both supposed would be off the board. Simmons was a question mark with the injury, like where does he fit? And so when Booker, Banks, and Williams were off, then we're like, it's got to be Nolan or Harmon. And that's the end of it. They went Nolan. And so, and you, Seth, I know you were really high on both. You were like, Harmon is the better bet. Nolan was absolutely fantastic, so he wouldn't be any worse a pick. But were they kind of a 1A, 1B in terms of the players that you would have picked in that scenario, assuming the picks, the guys that were all available?
Yeah, and you know, you look at the way it came about and everything like that. Like for me, it was really just about seeing, like you said, who was available, and then how that was going to fall. And so I had a similar grade on Nolan and Harmon. When the shoulder thing popped up with Harmon, it made sense to, you know, maybe pass on him in the first round a little more. Although going to the Steelers, he's probably going to, you know, quite frankly, be fantastic. And
he's going to be Cam Hayward, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he's really just going to be the reincarnation of Cam Hayward. You know, and so, but Nolan, like I said, man, he reminds me so much of Jeffrey Simmons, and his game is very, very similar to what Simmons does. And I think to see him it's going to be one of those situations where he's going to really, you know, change the overall makeup of the defense moving forward, because he's a true interior monster. Like, he's a guy that's very good against the run, but he's great against, you know, great at getting to the quarterback. And he's not going to be, you know, I know he liked to say I'm the next, you know, Aaron Donald, and I love the enthusiasm. But like I said, man, if you're Jeffrey Simmons and you're averaging, you know, 7 to 9 sacks a year from the interior over a, you know, 5-year period, that is just complete domination. That's exactly what
you want. And he's going to make $30 million in 4 years.
Right, exactly. Right. And that's just it. And so, you know, I think the thing that we tell everybody, we try to say this every year, and, you know, nobody listens, but, you know, we can continue to say it as much as we want. The thing with defensive linemen, specifically interior defensive linemen, is they rarely are playing more than 50% of the snaps in their rookie year. It's just not something that happens, and it's not a negative. You know, I pointed it out. The guy that was the AP or the all pro this year, right? Jalen Carter, 46%, I believe it was, as a rookie. I think all of us would 1000% agree we'd be okay if Walter Nolan had the same type of you know, trajectory that he did. Now, again, I'm not necessarily saying either that Walter Nolan's going to, you know, skyrocket to 84% of snaps in year two. That's a lot of snaps from an interior defensive lineman. That's a massive amount. By the way, Jalen Carter has 10.5 sacks in 2 years. So it's not like we're talking about a guy that's, you know, doing Aaron Donald-like things. But he's very, very good. And so that's what we have to remember. You know, I love the player. I love his style. He's ultra aggressive, which is so fun to watch because it's a little different than what we've seen in the past. And so he's a guy that I think, and again, I'm not saying this is who he will be. So don't say, well, you said this, but you know, I think he fills that Fletcher Cox role in Jonathan Gannon's defense. And you look back again.
I was just going to say that Adrian Wilson, he sees Darnell Dockett type impact, which Cardinals fans will remember. Like, Darnell Dockett was that guy. He was a weird, weird dude. But, like, and let's be fair, Darnell Dockett was also known for, he took some plays off, he was a little distracted teams, but his impact on the field, he had that anger inside him. If you can have a Darnell Dockett like impact, that's perfect. And the fact that now they have youth. Because they've got D-Rob, now they've got Walter Nolan. They still got Dante Stills, but I've got a sneaky, because that defensive line room, they're 8 deep. They cannot keep all 8 players. I am 100% convinced that if they are all healthy by the end of training camp, Dante Stills is going to be traded. Not because that they don't want him, but because he is the most valuable trade asset that you have. He was a 6-round pick, and you probably, because he's got 7.5 sacks or whatever in his first 2 years, I think, you can probably get a 4th-round pick, 5th-round pick, and you got it for a 6-round pick. For this is right now, the guys that they had, you're not gonna cut or trade Dalvin Tomlinson or Calais Campbell. They have 100% guaranteed money this year. Justin Jones and Bilal Nichols, they're not really tradable unless you can get someone that, even that trading one of them, even to a team that needs someone like that, you're not going to net very much. LJ Collier, he's not tradable. He's cuttable, but you've got $1.5 million in guaranteed money, so he'd have to be bad for them to cut him. And right. So I kind of feel that Dante Stills is on the way out, and not for a bad reason. He's just the most tradable asset they have, and he's probably going to go somewhere and be pretty good. And the only reason the Cardinals, and we're going to be in that situation with cornerback too, the only reason why you feel okay doing it is because you've got Nolan and Darius Robinson right there, because you've got two stud first round picks and you can't keep everyone, because like even seven is a lot to keep on a roster when you play mostly two interior linemen at a time when on your defense.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So, you know, unless they see a guy like Darius Robinson, or a guy we'll talk about in a little bit, as kind of edge guys in early down scenarios, right? Like, so they'll play what they call, you know, like a five tech as a defensive end in early downs and then slide inside on passing downs. But, you know, the reality is, like Jess said, you can only play so many of these guys at a time. So that's what, you know, why you'll, and when Jess talks about trading a guy, it's probably going to be like in August as things are
progressing. Yes.
Like, to make sure there's no
injuries. Because, like, injuries could happen between now and then. Suspensions could happen now and then. But, no, and that's when teams do that, is as they're trying to whittle down their roster, they look for deals. That's when, you know, the Cardinals can trade a guy like Corey Cunningham, a tackle for a six-round pick, and or how the Cardinals end up with Josh Dobbs, or, you know, the cornerback, the Trayvon Mullins, things like that. And teams make minor trades like that all the time, right around roster cuts, because there's a player that a other team might want who probably feels like they won't be able to claim them. And the teams who's cutting them is willing to take anything for them, because, you know, that's where we get the Cam Thomas trades and things like that. So, yeah. That's the impact, and it's going to be interesting, because how much is he going to play? You know, he's not going to play. Like, if you look at the rotation, they're going to play six to seven guys, maybe only dress six on game days, and that's going to be an interesting rotation. It's going to be so much competition. And the fact that with the work that they've done this offseason with the defensive line, their two best defensive linemen in 2024, LJ Collier and Dante Stills, are literally players 7 and 8 in the rotation. Now, granted, that's because Justin Jones and Bilal Nichols are coming back. They were injured last year. That's why Collier and Stills were the top two defensive linemen. But it just shows, and we've talked about this offseason, the fact that you can go from your two best defensive linemen to being the very back end of your rotation, that's how much better this room is.
Well, and that's just what's so nice about all of this, right? Like, we haven't seen this organization. And again, I don't want to harp on the Steve Keim era. It's over and it's done with. But again, I mean, their only investment on the defensive line under Steve Keim was in the early rounds, in the top two rounds, was Robert Kimdiche.
And then they went out and signed Darius Filon, only to have him that offseason. His defensive line moves were just awful busts.
but think about this, Jess. I'm being serious. Like, in top round picks, this guy took one defensive tackle in a decade. That's an absurd, you know, and I get it. You know, now we've gone over two positions, right? Corner and defensive tackle that we're never invested in, but you can look back and you can see why, right? Cause they went guard and linebacker. They went safety, convert to linebacker, and tight end. Finally in year three, and it just happened to coincide with probably his best draft, right? He went tackle and defensive end or edge, right? And so that's the thing, man, is like, when you don't invest early, and we talked about this with the Eagles, you know, when you don't invest early in the defensive line, this is what happens, because You just don't have the guys to rotate and develop. You don't have a guy turning into Milton Williams, because every time you draft a Milton Williams, you have to play them because you have no other options. So they have no time to learn and develop. And then you go, well, they're not good. So we got to move on to our next, you know, Lecky Fotu, whoever the next guy was. I mean, think about it.
Rashard Lawrence, all those guys.
Right, right. And, you know, the best one he probably drafted was who was the fourth? Rodney Gunter, right?
Yes.
And Gunter was decent, but it's not like we would say he was like a game wrecker. I mean, that's the thing. When you invest, and by the way, it does not mean it's going to work. That's the other thing, right? Like, it doesn't, but at least you're trying. At least you're taking bites of the apple. So you have options, and all of a sudden they have options, something they haven't had for a long time.
Next on the Rise of Sears podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move to day two, where the Cardinals made two selections. One that is highly praised. That's coming up next on the Rise of Sears. We're back on the Rise of Sears podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Now working on the Cardinals day two picks. In round two, with the 47th pick, they pick Michigan cornerback Will Johnson. And then in round three at number 78, they take Oregon edge Jordan Birch. Will Johnson, such a catastrophic fall, all because of a knee that doesn't even hurt him, right? And that is one of the things that is weird. And I will say this. I had a friend who was texting me, like, trade up for Will Johnson. Like, they're not trading up. But so excited they got Will Johnson. I am very excited about the pick. But you know what I am with this? The Cardinals are doing something that the other teams in the NFL are like, I'm not so sure about his viability. And the Cardinals are like, it's good. And anytime the Cardinals stray from what the norm is saying, I'm like, but is that smart? Because the Cardinals don't stray. That's like, this reminds me, and it's completely different. You remember Dorian Johnson? Dorian Johnson had that liver thing or whatever that supposedly was one of the reasons why he dropped to the fourth round. And everyone talked about Dorian Johnson as this plug and play day one starter at guard. And a lot of teams had him off their boards for this blood/liver issue. And the Cardinals were like, no, it's not a problem. Turned out that didn't be the problem at all. The fact he could not move. He just had no movement skills for the NFL, and he didn't make a practice. I think he signed with the team the next year, but the Cardinals cut up, didn't bring him back to the practice squad. And I think the Panthers signed him in an offseason, and then I think he played a little bit in the UFL. But I worry that the Cardinals bucking the NFL knowledge about his knee is going to bite them in the butt. And I know Johnson, fantastic player, he's pissed about it because he lost out on millions of dollars. And he said, my knee doesn't hurt. The teams aren't worried about the knee hurting right now. His knee, apparently, I thought they said on the broadcast, I think it was Pelissero that said, or maybe I think it was Ian Rappaport, that it's similar to Miles Jack's knee. And I remember you talking about, like, he played for 7 years, but they had to manage that knee injury. It's not a matter of it hurting now or swelling now. It's the fact that it is, that it's a chronic, that was a chronic and degenerative issue. And if that's the issue at a player like a cornerback, for a player who already is not the slightest of foot, could end up being a problem.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things that in the second round is worth a gamble, right? Because you can take a guy that needs a little help, and instead, you know, you can work and get him, you know, he can be a guy that just gets you 4 years, but you can have four high level years and you're okay with that. Where, you know, and then you sign him to a contract and it's a 3 year, you know, let's just say he hits, right? 3 year, $75 million deal. You know, in 4 years, to be honest, it'll probably be what, 3 years, 90 million at that rate, 100 million for corners. And you're okay with that, because even then you go, okay, well, you know, like you said, 7 years, and maybe that last year's rough, or those last year and a half's rough, but you look at it and you take that chance. Where as a first round pick, you look at it and you go, well, we need to get at least 5 years out of him. We got to get that fifth year, and then be able to, you know, hopefully sign him to a long term deal. And so you don't want to take a risk like that. And you know, I like the aggressiveness. I've said all along, he reminds me of how good James Bradberry was in his 1 year in Jonathan Gannon's defense. And I really think that that's the type of player you're going to get from, you know, with him and what he's going to be for this team.
Right. And getting another quarter, but the good thing about this is that he is a guy that you're drafting who has played at a big school, was on a championship defense, and he could, like, he has the talent to be like a legit CB1, like a number one cornerback, which you already have a dynamic slot in Garrett Williams, whether they're going to use him inside or out, or if just inside, or they're going to expand his role. You know, when you've got Star Thomas's and Sean Murphy Buntings, Will Johnson in the second round, like, we love the Max Melton pick, but this is getting someone better. Like, you'd have to look at, if you watch his play, ignoring Travis Hunter, Will Johnson, most would say, was the top cover guy at the position.
Right. And, you know, after Travis Hunter, you didn't really have a guy that, to me, was a superior prospect to Will Johnson. You know, I had Will Johnson as in the same tier. And then, you know, when the medicals came out, I did move him down into that same tier with, like, Jahdae Barron and Trey Amos, two guys I really liked. But, you know, I think all those guys are flawed in their own way. And Johnson, it was, to me, kind of the clear guy, or clear wide receiver, or sorry, cornerback two in this class. And if there are no medicals, I feel like he's a guy that is easily drafted earlier, right? Like, and he automatically becomes a potential alpha for this secondary, which is always really tough to find.
Yeah. Then at that point, the only thing I would have liked to have seen more would have been, because I was kind of set on getting an edge guy, and the fact that the Ohio State kid, well, technically still on the board was Nick Scouten, which I would have loved at that spot. At cornerbacks, there was also Benjamin Morrison, which I was super intrigued in, although he was coming off the hip. JT Tuimoloau out of Ohio State, but he went two guys, but that I was like, ah, dang it, because I would have loved to address the edge in the second round, but they took care of that in round three. And so if you're looking at who is on the board, like, you got Ariante Ursary as a, you know, tackle who could have gone there, Nick Scouten, Femi Oladejo, the edge out of UCLA, maybe Benjamin Morrison, a cornerback out of Notre Dame. Tate Ratledge, Georgia, goes at number 57. See, Mike Green dropped the edge, dropped all the way to 59. But
he was ever on that board, right?
Right, right. And so it's an obvious steal if he's healthy. And so this has the potential to be the greatest value pick the Cardinals have, which takes us to round three, which when they didn't pick up an edge in round two, I was like, who's still on the ball? I'm like, Princely Umanmielen. And then to see the Carolina Panthers leapfrog the Cardinals at number 77 to take Princely. I'm like, oh, 100%. He was the Cardinals. He was the Cardinals' top priority in that round, don't you think? Based on the move that the Panthers did.
I mean, maybe I've talked to people about this, and you know, the pick of Jordan Birch was so different than the player Princely is. Princely is a finesse light edge rusher, whereas Jordan Birch is a 6'4".
Look at Darius Robinson.
Yeah, 6'4", 280-pound man-child. That, and so, like, to me, I get where people are like, oh, they panicked and took an edge. I'm like, I don't think they did. I think I think that they had a different idea of what the, and that's why I intimated earlier is like, you wonder if this is like their ideal thing of like, we can have Darius and Birch on the edge together in obvious run situations. Cause all of a sudden we have two 280-pound defensive ends to go along with, you know, whether it's Walter Nolan and Dalvin Tomlinson, or you can go super big.
Like, they got giant. You could have their base, which is their 3-4, could be a legitimate monster 5-man front.
Right. And so you look at it, and so I don't necessarily think that's something like, I do get it. I do get what people are saying, but I just think that it's a lot of like, they're just so different, man.
Yeah. It's true. But like, I didn't hate the pick. He just wasn't one of the pass rushers that I kind of was seeing connect to the Cardinals ever. When you pull him up and you're like, oh, he's big. He had good testing numbers, especially at his size. And he was productive. We're talking about a guy that had 8.5 sacks, I think 11 tackles for loss, 7 tipped passes to go along with that last year at Oregon. And the only other guy that I was like, okay, you know what, who would make sense is Kyle Kennard out of South Carolina, but he didn't go for another round. And so that made sense because the rest of the NFL, even though Kyle Kennard happened to lead the SEC in sacks. So Jordan Birch, I don't like, I like the pick. I think it's a really, really good pick. It wasn't my favorite pick, but like it, the first three rounds, if you think about it, guess what? Like, it's not the ideal situation where Donovan Jackson said they didn't get a guard in their top three picks, and they didn't get a receiver in those top three picks, but they got a guy in Will Johnson who is a clear first round talent in round two. So they got their interior, they got their edge. And so the Cardinals have really built out that defensive front. And their edge room also very full, because you've got Josh Sweat, you've got Zaven College, you've got Baron Browning, you got B.J. Ojulari coming back. You still got Xavier Thomas on the roster. I'm not counting on him. And then you add Jordan Birch. Guess what? That is a full rotation. That's a full rotation right there. That's like, if you put Birch ahead of Thomas, that's a 5-man solid rotation with Sweat, Collins, Browning, Ojulari, and Birch. That defense has been, and we didn't even talk about the fact that the defense, that they went 6 players defense in this draft after they went heavy defense in free agency. I know Monty downplays it, but let's be clear. The Cardinals this offseason made it a priority to improve the defense. I think they viewed that offense and said, this offense is good enough. This offense is good enough. We can improve here and there, but like, our problem last year was not the offense. Our problem was the defense. And that defense is stacked. And so I like the Birch pick. He wasn't on my radar.
Right. And I go back to, you know, the last 2 games of the season. And that's just something that I've looked at over and over again. And, you know, and this, you know, a lot of people want to give certain players a problem, but it's like, you know, think about the last 2 games, Jess, Chuba Hubbard had 100, or not last two games, but the two games that basically eliminated them from the playoffs, Chuba Hubbard had 152 yards rushing and two touchdowns. And then in the game against the Rams, right, which was kind of the elimination game, Kyren Williams only had 56 yards rushing, but he had a touchdown. And this was a game that they had, you know, opportunities to really change the outcome of the season. And they had no sacks against the Rams. I'm going to look back, but I don't know how many sacks they had against the Panthers, but it wasn't very many. And that's, you know, where it really comes down to is, like, this is a team that at the end of the season, when and people talk about this all the time, you know, when push comes to shove at the end of the year, what typically happens? Teams that can run the ball consistently and play good defense win games. And the Cardinals were, you know, dealing again with a banged up James Conner after the Carolina game, but their defense just wasn't what they needed it to be. And you know, it just became a situation where they couldn't get wins when it mattered. And so that's, you know, that's what makes it tough. But I think that's been the impetus this offseason is like, hey, like we can now hold our own at the end of the season.
Yeah, that'd be ideal. Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Best Air Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's move on to the day three picks. That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. Back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Best Air Cardinals Talk on the Web. Round four, they go with Cody Simon. And round four, out linebacker out of Ohio State, where we're becoming the Arizona Buckeyes or the Ohio State Cardinals. Understandably, that's a fantastic program. That was a pick. It didn't shock me, but the more I look at it, I'm like, I really like this pick because it's at a, you know, you talked about how that kind of philosophy, if you can get a round four type linebacker, it doesn't match it. Like, I think personally, appearance wise, he kind of reminds me of Jordan Hicks. Now, Cody Simon had to wait a long time till he got the starting role. But once he did that last year at Ohio State, he did everything. Sneaky, sneaky, he could end up being a starter. I don't think he's going to, but like, he could start at the mic this year. They brought him Akeem Davis Gaither. They brought him Michael Walker. They've got Mac Wilson. But the guys that brought in Davis Gaither, Michael Walker, they've been largely special teams players. And Cody Simon he's got the size, he's got the athleticism, and he's so smart. So smart. That's a sneaky good pick, I think.
Dude, this is Jonathan Gannon's TJ Edwards, I'm telling you. I've talked about the TJ Edwards thing for a couple years now, and about, you know, how they took him as an undrafted, right? He was a bit player in 2019 and then started 2020, 2021, 2022, you know. And again, he's not an all-pro. He's not a Pro Bowler, but he is a sound, fundamental tackling machine at linebacker. I mean, and he is one of the highest paid linebackers in the NFL. Remember, he got that the bag from the Bears after balling out in Philly. And that's what I see with Cody Simon, man. Like, I just see a guy that fits that mold. They are the same, they're the same size, same athletic ability. I mean, this is a guy that his last year in Philly, I mean, this dude played 94% of the snaps on defense. Then he went to Chicago, 97, and then 99 in his 2 years. Like, he's the next TJ Edwards. He's just gonna step up, and he's gonna be the guy. And like you said, it's probably not gonna be this year, but it's gonna be over the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's really good. Round five was, to me, I'll say this. The round five pick was the one I was like, but why? They love drafting cornerbacks. Well, and first it was really, like, you knew it was coming. They finally, because Monty Austin Fort referenced it in his press conferences, they had a couple offers to move back in round two. They had an offer to move back in round three. He said after the draft that they also had an offer on the table to move back in round four. Monty couldn't not make a trade. And since they didn't have a sixth round pick, he moved back 20-something spots and managed to get a sixth round pick. And so at the very, very back end of round five, they get Ohio State cornerback Denzel Burke. I don't hate the pick. I just like, you draft so many cornerbacks. Like, it means, like, as it is, Ketrell Clark, I don't help say there's a way that he can make this team. And that's fine. He was a sixth round pick a couple of years ago. Star Thomas, you're probably going to have, like, he's a guy you could trade. Legitimate. You could trade him because he doesn't cost a lot. Or Sean Murphy Bunting. I'm like, you can't really cut him because he's got $6.7 million in fully guaranteed salary. But the way things, and you need a kind of a veteran on the team, but what are they going to, like, you've got Will Johnson, you've got Star Thomas, you've got Max Melton, you've got Garrett Williams, you've got Sean Murphy Bunty, and then you had Elijah Jones, who didn't even, he was on IR all year in round as a third rounder, and then you added this kid, Denzel Burke. It reminded me, even though Jaden Davis in round seven was like, why in the world would you do that? There's nothing special about him. Denzel Burke comes from a big conference. He can play off the ball really well. I like the player, but I was like, but why? Not that I thought that there was anything better that they could have picked instead of him. I would have loved to have seen like a receiver. Not that there was anyone less. A running back might have made sense as well. Like a late round running back, I would have preferred to another cornerback.
He reminds me of a former Philadelphia Eagle, former Ohio State Buckeye, Kurt Coleman, right? Like drafted late on day three, from, like you said, from Ohio State. Good, you know, decent size, good enough athleticism, good ball player, just, you know, doesn't stand out in any one way. And Coleman stuck around for, I want to say a decade, started a ton of games in that time. He even made a Pro Bowl one time. Like, that's how long and well he played. So I think that's kind of the same thing with Burke, is they see a guy that's a good football player that maybe doesn't have any standout traits. I mean, don't get me wrong, a 4.48 is phenomenal. Like, I'm not underselling it, but for NFL DBs, it's very, you know, it's
normal. It's normal. It's not special.
It's 80th percentile, which is very high, but his 1.5-10 split is great. And he has decent arm length. I mean, it's not super small like we were seeing with some of these guys, right? So it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, at that point, it's almost like they were like, hey, we're just taking the best player available, right? Like,
it makes sense. They said they did that. They said they did that. And so I guess if philosophically you go with it, the plus side, he does have special teams experience over the last couple of years in kicks and punts. And so, because Ketrell last year, the thing about Ketrell is that he played what I think 97 snaps on defense, and he only played like 103, 110 on special teams. And so he was a why are you on the roster guy. he did get a few snaps late in the year, but my guess is Burke probably is the new Ketrell, only with the higher upside, I'm guessing.
Yeah, probably.
And then we go to round six, since they picked up that sixth round pick, and they get Texas guard Hayden Connor. At this point in the draft, I'm like, well, yeah, like, I'll say this, round six and seven, nothing excites me, except when you get a hyper-athletic guy that you know is going to make an impact on special teams. Hayden Connor's a guy who's going to do, like, he might make the team, and if he does make the team, you probably will never see him active. So this is a pick for the future. Sure, why not? He's big. He can play any position on the line. But you know, he was played alongside Christian Jones for a couple of seasons. So I don't hate the pick, but it's like, well, it's definitely going to do nothing this year.
Yeah, and that's okay. I mean, he's a guy that fits in with the culture. He's a hard worker. I love the attitude and the conversations he had afterwards of like, I'll just do whatever they ask me. Like, I'm humble enough to know that I whether it's a backup or practice squad, I got to earn my spot. And that's a guy that'll endear himself to this franchise and this, his teammates.
And then lastly in round 7, Keaton Crawford, safety out on that. Love the pick. Seventh round picks, I don't really care about, but
special teams freak of nature.
Yes, special teams freak of nature. So athletic. So he's an athletic freak at the position of safety. Chad Royer at NFL.com thought, you know, threw it out there that he might be a nickel safety. I'm not going to say that. But I'm just thinking that if you can get a seventh round pick who makes an impact on special teams, that's a perfect pick because you've got the athletic traits. He played over 1,000 special team snaps between his time in, what was it, Texas, right? And before going to Nevada.
Yep.
And so he came from a big program. I don't think he has much upside. If you can't crack the starting lineup at a big time college, you're probably not going to be an NFL starter. However, he has a niche. He's a good special teamer. That's really good. So it's perfect. It's about as excited as I could be for a seventh round pick.
But you're talking about a guy, like you said, that could end up becoming like a, and we're not like trying to like oversell this because it is, like you said, it's a seventh round pick. It is what it is. But like he could legitimately be the next Justin Bethel. Right, like a special teams dynamo all pro level type of player. And I know people are going to be like, well, that's asking a lot, but like he's got that ability, and that's what, you know, that was the thing with Bethel, right? Like you come in, you hope that you can get more from him, but if you don't, and he's just, and I use that term very lightly, a special teams ace, those guys stick around forever. And they play forever, and it may not be for the Cardinals forever, but Justin Bethel played for 12 NFL years. Seasons.
12 NFL seasons out of Presbyterian is the college.
Right.
And you know, he was great as a special 3-time Pro Bowler. Then he sort of didn't work out as a starter, but then he played, like after he left the Cardinals, he played for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more seasons, and a dozen years in the NFL for anybody
is
that's incredible. That's a fantastic career. Fantastic career. And so, you know, I seventh round picks, I'm not never fans of, but when you get a guy that's going to contribute immediately. And even the safety room is going to be an interesting competition because they brought back Joey Blunt. Not that I care much about Jamie Robinson. He's really a special teams guy. I wonder if they like the group that they have enough that maybe Jalen Thompson could be created. They don't have like, so you would need Crawford or Blunt to show that they can be reliable enough as to play like an Andre Sacheret role or to play the role that Rabbit did last year. Like if you have Buddha and Rabbit as your starters, but Blunt or Crawford could play like the Andre Sacheret or Rabbit role from the last 2 years and feel comfortable while also playing special teams, that's great. So keep an eye on that, perhaps. But otherwise, you might be seeing Crawford battling Blunt for the final spot on the roster, and that'll be an interesting battle. So with that, coming up at the Ride of the Seabird podcast, best of our Cardinals talk on the web. One last little segment. Grades. What do we think of the Cardinals picks? What are overall grades? That's coming next on Rise of Seabird. We're back on the Rise of Seabird podcast, best of our Cardinals talk on the web, as we'll wrap things up talking about draft grades. PFF, they were wild, gave the Cardinals an A+. I'm like, that's weird. It's hard. Like anytime we talk about draft grades, this is all about perception. And so it is about like three things. One, need, fit, perceived value. And so you could pick a guy it's also, you base it on, well, who else was available? And we don't, can't actually do that. So I gave the Cardinals overall an A minus on the, in the draft. I gave, I think, A minus. I think I gave an A for Cam, for DeWalter Nolan. I gave them a B for Will Johnson simply because if the rest of the NFL knows, like if the Cardinals are going against what the rest of the NFL says, I don't trust them. I like the Birch pick. I think that was a B plus, A minus pick. Simon has potential. Burke was a C to me because of just why another cornerback. The Hayden Connor doesn't do much for me, but I gave Keaton Crawford an A, but that's more like an, that's a seventh, that's an A for a seventh round pick.
Yeah, and you look at it, you know, like the A plus, what draft grades end up stemming from or what? Like how guys set their boards and then how they perceive the picks. And so, you know, one of the things that you can use is, I think his name's Walter Sharp. I don't remember off the top of my head, but, or Warren Sharp, maybe. I don't remember. But this guy does like a consensus board look, right? And then he grades like what type of value people get. And the Cardinals were considered, I believe, the third best. I'm double checking right now if I can find the tweet or the post, whatever they call them now. I don't care. But I think they were the number three team overall in value. Yeah, third. So, but again, this is based on the consensus boards. And so the consensus boards are going to give them a ton of points because of Will Johnson. Like Will Johnson was a consensus top, what, 15? We'll say 20.
15 pick, yeah.
Yeah. So getting him at 47, if you say he's at 20 and you get him at 47, that's 27 value points you've added. Right. So it's hard to gauge because, you know, they got of that pick. And I know some people had Jordan Birch ranked as a top 75 pick. And I know some people had Cody Simon as a day two, you know, late, but day two pick. And I think actually Denzel Burke was rated as a top 120 player. So that's where those, that value comes in. Right. And so for me, you know, like you said, Walter Nolan's an A pick. Will Johnson, I guess you give it a B plus because of the injury concerns, right? Like you could even say a B. It takes it down a letter grade because you have to, if he's healthy, it's an A. If it's not, it's probably a D. You took a swing, you missed, but you average it out to like a B-ish. Birch, I would give a B just because we're starting to get to the point of redundancy a bit, which again, I don't think there's a problem with that. I think Cody Simon for a fourth round pick based on what I think he can become would be an A. Burke would be like a B minus C. Connor, I like a lot. I think, you know, but again, is he going to get a shot over Isaiah Adams? Are they going to bring back Will Hernandez? Those are all questions. So I would say he's, you know, a solid B. And then, like you said, Crawford's an A, but we're talking about a seventh round pick that we're hoping provides value as a special teamer. So I think overall you would rate this like a, you know, probably a high B plus level draft because they filled needs that you still have some questions. About that slot receiver position and about, you know, quite frankly, wide receiver too. We all want Michael Wilson to do it. It just, he hasn't yet, but it's only
he hasn't. 2 years. He hasn't. And that is the one area where we're like, they didn't touch receiver. We'll say this. Kyler Murray, when he was going around his, like he was on the PNHC podcast, he did the media rounds promoting his celebrity softball game. That's coming up here in a couple of weeks. He said, we don't need a receiver. Like, he believes in the guy. And I know that's teammate talk, but it's obvious based on how they handled the offseason and how they handle the draft, they don't see the receiver position as needing anything because they made no effort to really add anyone in the offseason. That, like, their most significant addition, like, other than bringing back Zay Jones and Greg Dortch, is a dude named Simi Fehoko.
Right.
Exactly. That's about it.
And I feel the same way about the guard position. We're excited, I think maybe it's a strong word. We're optimistic, let's say that Isaiah Adams can do the job. So there's a guy named Royce Newman, Jake Curhan, you know, and so that's the thing.
And they still got John Gaines too. So you got John Gaines back there too. So you've got a little bit of, you know, maybe there's something there, because we'll see that, because they brought back Evan Brown, and then they've got a whole bunch of stuff they can throw at the right guard position. Hopefully something plays out, right? Hopefully something sticks.
Right. And so that's just kind of where we're at now. It's like, is the roster perfect? Absolutely not. There's, you know, so much that can still be done. But there is literally no way you can look at the roster and go, it's not better from January, whatever, you know, whatever the last day of the season was. Like, this is, especially on the defensive side of the ball, you look at it, we're talking 5 impact new starters on a defense that desperately needed the talent with depth.
That's so good. And we'll go and wrap this up. Wrapping this up on the Rise Up Secret podcast, Best Hour Cardinals Talk on the Web. This is episode 658. Stop. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is Rise Up Secret podcast. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!